So the theme for today's talk is called What is the Sound of a Single Hand? Which is one of the koans in our tradition. And I'd like to speak a little bit about Hakuin, because he's a very notable character and also the originator of this koan. So Hakuin Ekaku was born in 1685 at the base of Mount Fuji, and his father was a samurai. And Hakuin was the youngest of five children. His mother was a religious devotee of the Nichiren sect. And even from a young age, Hakuin was gifted with this extraordinary memory. It is said that at 4 years of old age, he knew approximately 100 folk songs, which is quite extraordinary if you think of it. Wow. And at 8 years old, he heard the Lotus Sutra chanted in the village, and returned home and with perfect recall recited the whole Lotus Sutra to his family. It pays to have a good memory, you know. I think we could do a bit more of that. Hakuin ordained when he was about 15 at the local temple called Shoinji, where he later taught for many years, and he also died there in 1768, so he was about 83 years old when he died. And Hakuin's life abounds with rather dramatic episodes. It was probably due to his headlong kind of do or die quality to his practice, you know, that he had his initial breakthrough. And his kind of attitude, fierce kind of samurai, kind of do or die attitude to practice, also caused a lot of problems in his life as well. Very dramatic episodes happened to him. And his initial breakthrough occurred at the age of 23 by working on the koan mu. And he was so absorbed in his koan, he used to forget to even eat for days, it is said. And suddenly, the booming of the temple bell brought him to realization. And I'm going to speak a little bit more today about awakening through sound, but I'll do that later. But with the dissolution of doubt, in his initial opening experience, came another challenge for Hakuin. His pride soared like a majestic mountain. I have attained enlightenment. One of those thoughts, the I thought. Very strong in that case. So he went to see an old eccentric teacher, Shoju Rojin, who lived in the mountains with his aged mother and had a few dedicated students, who quickly kind of burst Hakuin's inflated ego. And this is the dialogue that on meeting his teacher. Shoju said, "How do you understand Zhao Zhou's mu?" Mu translates as nothing, remember. And Hakuin said, "Where is mu such that one could put arms and legs on it?" That was his response. So Hakuin, that he replied in that way, and the old man abruptly twisted Hakuin's nose like that, declaring, "Here's somewhere to put arms and legs, you poor pit-dwelling devil. Do you suppose somehow you have sufficient understanding?" And from that time onward, Shoju Rojin hounded Hakuin day and night, calling him a pit-dwelling devil. And that became his Dharma name. So how would you like to have a kind of Dharma name on the back that says pit-dwelling devil? There's a later kind of case that we'll take up about pit-dwelling devil too, part of Hakuin. However, due to Hakuin's zeal and rigorous and kind of relentless efforts in his early years, he also suffered a mental breakdown. Yeah, he was kind of a fierce kind of character. And at 19, he had his first mental breakdown, which plunged him into deep despair. And Hakuin sought healing from a hermit in the mountains who used Chinese medicine and also taught him meditative techniques that eventually healed him completely over 2 years. I think that's kind of rather remarkable, actually, and I don't think our mental health services, with all, you know, can always heal a kind of mental breakdown in 2 years. Yeah. So, but this these youthful illnesses, in fact, really shaped Hakuin's character too, because not only did he have a fierce side, but he also had an incredible compassionate side to him, and he had great concern for the health of his disciples and their states of mind. And he was always saying, you know, he emphasized health of body and mind in his community, and that in order to preserve and carry one's practice to completion through awareness of one's diet and exercise and maintaining optimum health. So he was very strict in the monastery about having a very balanced, you know, diet and exercise in there. Hakuin was not only a great Zen master, but also was renowned, renowned Japanese artist and master of calligraphy and sculptor. And his ink paintings are amongst the most renowned works of Zen painting still today and in the museums in Japan. And I recall one piece of calligraphy that Hakuin did, which I think is one of the most extraordinary pieces of calligraphy, of Fudo Myo, which Fudo Myo is the kind of a character often on the four corners of the temple. It's like a fierce guardian character. And he did this ink painting at the end of a 100-day retreat, and he just did the character from Fudo Myo. And it was on black paper with white ink, so kind of the reverse of what normally Zen paintings are done. And he just did this kind of incredible one-stroke kind of fluid character, yeah, that was like smoke. If you can imagine white ink that kind of is somewhat transparent and this incredible fluidity. It was just quite extraordinary, you know, transparent and luminous. And in that sort of character, you know, it captures that one breath, one mind, you know, in one great fluid stroke, everything just right there. And Hakuin also built several temples and was instrumental in rebuilding the beautiful mountain monastery of Rutakuji. And he first started teaching at the age of 26, so he kind of had a long teaching career. And he stressed morality and living a virtuous life. He stated that morality is the foundation stone of practice, and without morality there can be no true practice, and therefore no true attainment. And in fact, the depth of one's morality is also the depth of one's attainment. We could take heed to that these days. So he is renowned for creating one of the primary koans in our tradition called What is the Sound of a Single Hand? And due to his early pride in his attainment, and because he sincerely felt that it was necessary to really apply oneself to serious practice after an inside experience, after awakening experience, he recommended deepening one's understanding and insight through systemic koan training. And we owe our present koan curriculum, in fact, to Hakuin, and he really brought life back into the Rinzai tradition and path in Japan, which it almost died out at that time. And I know for myself too that, you know, in a way it was only because of perhaps two things, the love of my teachers, Eiken Roshi and John Tarrant, but also the only thing that brought me back to this crazy, weird, bizarre tradition of Zen, over and over and over, in fact, was because of the koans. And these koans, you know, each one is like a window into eternity. And it helps to deepen our understanding and polish the jewel. Yeah? And it koans throw us again and again and again into this empty one ground over and over and over. And how often we need to learn that? Yeah, endlessly, it seems. And it's a bit like koans. I have this metaphor for koans. It's a bit like, you know, this beautiful cloth of indigo, which Ellen has a little bit on her robe there. And indigo cloth comes out of Japan. In order to get the color indigo, that really rich, deep blue, beautiful color, you have to dye the cloth 40 times in the dye bucket. Keep dipping it in and out, 40 times at least to get the color indigo. And in a way, We have to keep dipping ourselves into, yeah, this essential ground right here, over and over and over, yeah, to get that really rich, deep resonance and understanding. Yeah. So each koan refines our understanding. And although we study particular ancient dialogues between an enlightened master and student, they do not represent the private opinion of just a single person. The insight we gain through working with koans is timeless and accords with the essential source of all things. So, what is the sound of a single hand? Its direct translation of the original Japanese is Sekishu no Oto, the sound of one pair of palms. And some students have heard the incorrect translation, what is the sound of one hand clapping? There's no clapping, actually, in the actual translation. And so many students initially think this koan is asking them to find a kind of sound or make a sound. Yeah. Well, it's much deeper than that. It's not about producing a sound. It's really about entering into the world of suchness, yeah, again and again. So Hakuin gives these instructions in working with this koan that he developed. He said, when you clap together both hands, a sharp sound is heard. When you raise the one hand, there is neither sound nor smell. The echo of the completely empty valley bears tidings heard from the soundless sound. This is something that can by no means be heard with the ear. If conceptions and discriminations are not mixed within it, and it is quite apart from seeing, hearing, perceiving, and knowing. If while walking, standing, sitting, and reclining, you proceed straightforwardly, without interruption, and focus on this koan, you will suddenly pluck out the karmic root of birth and death and break down the cave of ignorance. At this time, the basis of mind, consciousness, and emotion is suddenly shattered. The realm of illusion, with its endless sinking in the cycle of birth and death, is overturned. Thus you attain great peace. So those are kind of quite strong kind of instructions, yeah, in working with this koan. And we have a number checking questions too that we give to students here when we work with this primary koan. For example, what happens to the sound of the single hand after you die? Show me the sound of the single hand before your parents were born. Can the sound of a single hand be cut off by the sharp sword? Show me the sound of the single hand on top of Uluru. So these are kind of questions seem so bizarre and obscure when there is no insight. But when you have some understanding, then they become vividly apparent. But here in Sesshin, you know, we have all of these kind of wonderful opportunity to listen to sound here. You know, Sesshin is like a kind of symphony, isn't it? Yeah. And there's the kind of, you know, so many instruments here. There's the ding, the clap, the bong, the kind of tok tok of the han. You know, Sesshin is rather musical in a way. And so there's a lovely practice we can have by just listening, just hearing. And the Buddha inquired into many years ago when he was checking with all his major disciples at the time, and inquired into how did they awaken, how did they, you know, attain enlightenment, by what method or what happened, yeah. And in the Suragama Sutra, each disciple gives a description about how they awakened through various kind of listening or the sense through various sense doors. And Kundanya, in fact, said that he awakened through the sense door of hearing the sounds. And then Buddha went on to give a discourse about, in fact, how extraordinary it is that through the hearing consciousness. He said there are a number of primary ways to come to awakening, And one of them is through hearing. Because in a way, when we're listening, it's one of the sense doors that cannot be blocked so easily. Yeah? The other sense doors, for our eyes, we can shut our eyes, and we can close off in other ways some of the sense doors, the six sense doors. But with hearing, it's hard to close off the hearing consciousness. Yeah? Sounds come from all directions. Yeah? So the sense door of hearing is open most of the time. So it's one of the primary ways where we can awaken. And Basui, one of the great Zen masters in the 13th century, developed the koan, who's hearing? And this has become one of our primary koans that Hakuin included into the koan curriculum. So when we're just listening, and just sitting there in the silence, and we settle down into a deep place of stillness and silence. Yeah? And there's very little thought. Yeah? When you're just listening, it's not about reaching out towards the sounds. Yeah? It's not kind of trying to analyze the sounds or figure out what bird that is, for example. You know, that will take you into kind of endless kind of, encyclopedias or dictionaries or something. It's not about reaching out. It's about letting the sound come to you and enter into that silence. Yeah. And just standing on the veranda this morning, it's so gorgeous. Just standing there and listening to the cacophony of sounds coming from this. There must have been a whole kind of gathering of birds over there somewhere in the kind of mountain valley. It was a. Oh, it was that what it was? Thank you.
Better than the original.
Yes. I wondered why there was a whole symphony coming out of one space. But yeah, it was extraordinary listening to the lyrebird. And it was, just the repertoire was amazing. And I was thinking, Zen is finally kind of, finally kind of entered into this ground, into the land of Australia, when the lyrebird starts going, talk the Dharma, or chanting the Heart Sutra. Well, it's finally here. So there was this beautiful kind of symphony here. So when we practice just hearing, let the sound come to you. Yeah, let the sound enter the ear. And it's very beautiful, a kind of who's hearing at the point of this koan. The point of this koan. And like all koans, and the point of this koan is to close the gap between the hearer and the heard, between the subject and the object world. Yeah. So when we're just hearing, in that stillness, there's no one to hear. Yeah. When the sound enters fully, then there's just that bird song that fills the whole being, the whole universe. Yeah. And that is a beautiful thing. And so we get out of our own way, and then we are filled with this spacious silence and all the sounds. And we contain all the sounds, each and every sound and each and every voice, the laughter of the kookaburra and the tears of the world too, and each person's voice here. Yeah. And we become intimate with that. And it's a kind of lovely thing in session, everyone here is now kind of deep in session, and there's a kind of presence and quality, and mindfulness, and people are doing a beautiful job here. Yeah? Your practice is deep and gorgeous. And it's even interesting in the chanting. Yeah? When we first come into session, the chanting is kind of, a bit rusty, and everyone's a kind of bit out of tune, and the kind of a bit cumbersome and so on. And as we tune in to the sounds and we tune into ourselves and tune into each other and each other tune us, then there's a kind of harmony and a connection and deep intimacy with each and every voice that kind of has a resonance. And it's powerful, beautiful. And the Buddha said too that the Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva is the one who hears the sounds of the world. And often Avalokiteshvara is also put on the altar because it represents three aspects of the truth here in regard to hearing the sounds. Avalokiteshvara is the one who hears the sounds and is awakened by the sounds. And Avalokiteshvara is the very sound itself. Yeah? When that sound, that birdsong, fills your whole being, that is Avalokiteshvara right there at that moment. And it is also the part of us that responds, you know, that hears the cries of suffering in the world, and we reach out and respond to that. So it has three aspects, three functions. It is the sounds, it awakens to the sounds, and it responds to those sounds. Yeah. So coming back to Hakuin, Hakuin had some lovely interactions with women, which I always thought was a kind of nice to kind of hear about in our tradition. We have such a kind of samurai, patriarchal, kind of rigorous style of Zen, you know. But there were some wonderful women, and these are two stories of women who were gathered around Hakuin. In fact, one of the first people to join Hakuin's community was a 16-year-old girl named Satsu. And she was awakened soon after studying with Hakuin. And one day she was sitting zazen on a box when her father approached and asked, "What do you think you're doing sitting there on a box?" And she said, 16-year-old girl, "Buddha's image is in the box," she replied. "If there is any place where Buddha does not exist, I ask you to take me there, Father." If there is any place where Buddha does not exist, I ask you to take me there. Her father was very shocked at this. So he sent her back to Hakuin. Didn't know what to do with her. On another occasion, a monk asked her, "What is the meaning of breaking the white rock within the rubbish heap?" And she immediately was obviously drinking tea at the time. She immediately threw down and shattered the tea bowl like this, and she was just going, smashed the tea bowl in front of the monk. And the white rock here, what is the meaning of the white rock in the middle of the rubbish heap? The white rock is a kind of metaphor for our essence, for our understanding, essential nature, in the middle of this rubbish heap, this body and mind, you know. What is the meaning of that? And she just kind of smashed the teacup. Yeah, that was her presentation. She was an interesting young woman. There was an older woman called a station lady, who was also an interesting teacher as well. And she came from a place called Hara, which I think is probably one of the suburbs of the district in which Hakuin taught. And she was called the station lady. We don't really know her name. And she was listening to one of his lectures one day, and Hakuin said, "Mind is the pure land, and the body itself is Amitabha Buddha. When Amitabha appears, mountains, rivers, grasses, and trees all radiate a pure light." The old woman pondered this day and night. One day, while she was simply scrubbing a pot at home, just, you know, doing her housework, a great insight flashed through her mind, and she threw down the pot and ran off to Hakuin. "Amitabha Buddha has crashed into my body," she exclaimed. "Mountains, rivers, grasses, and trees all shine greatly." "Splendid," she said. She jumped up and down with joy. And Hakuin just sat there and said, "So you say. But what about a cesspool? What about your asshole? Does it too also emanate a great light?" Good checking question, huh? No, the woman was quite, you know, she came back with a good response too. The woman went straight up to him and gave him a slap, whack, and said, "This old guy still hasn't penetrated." Still hasn't seen through. And Hakuin just simply roared with laughter. I think both of them roared with laughter at that. So the station woman really shows us the way to practice, yeah, right in the midst of our daily chores. Yeah, just bring total absorption and attention to the work at hand. Just scrubbing the pot, just cleaning the dojo, just chopping the vegetables. Yeah, unite with each thing just as it is. And the pot also here can be a metaphor here for a container, the container of sesshin that we simply need to attend to, sitting down mindfully, doing zazen, returning to your breath, returning to your koan, yeah, returning to each step as you walk around the dojo, faithfully attending to the way, one step at a time. The pot is the container also that holds the many flavors of life's meal. Yeah. Smashing the pot here is a symbolic, dramatic act of being released and seeing through one's identification with this whole mind-body process and phenomena as self. It is seeing through, probably for this woman, seeing through the role of cook or housewife or station lady who probably was in the back of the kitchen scrubbing the pots at the station, the railway station perhaps. So often maybe they didn't have railways at that time. Probably have some kind of station. Some other kind of station. Way station. Whatever. Yes, that's what it is. The inn, that's right. She was probably the cook, yeah? Cleaning the pot, just like Linda. Stirring the pot. Yeah. So often our role in life defines who we think we are, but that's only a limited version of who we really are. What is that which all roles appear and disappear into? All things are seen through in that moment when you completely unite with just that stirring the pot. Yeah. And so she said, Amitabha Buddha has crashed into my own body. Everything on earth is emanating a great light. How wonderful. Yes, indeed, how wonderful. And she danced with joy, and this is the joy of the way. Yes, it is indeed wonderful, and it's a kind of shift, a revolution of consciousness, yeah, opening of the heart, mind. And in ordinary consciousness, we do, however, experience ourselves, the kind of in the world and the world out there, and each thing is separate. But the reverse is true when we deeply awaken. Yeah, each thing is inside us. Yeah, it is one and the same. Each thing comes crashing inside. Yeah, the daisy comes inside. The sound of the birds come inside. The forest and the cabins and the bare walls of the dojo also come inside, until there is only inside. Yeah, and then you can't even call it inside. This is the dance of the universe, and this is the joy, yeah? The understanding of our true nature revealing itself over and over. This is the world of suchness, things just as they are. And then Hakon said, so you say, but what about your asshole? Does that also emanate a great light? Yeah, and it's easy to see, isn't it, how the beautiful things of the landscape and the sound of the birds and the lovely things that we enjoy to emanate a great light. We can start to see those beautiful things. But Hakuin is asking us something further here. Yeah, can we really, really embody that, in our humanity, in our ordinariness? Yeah. What about the pit toilet? What about peeing on the grass? What about putting out the garbage? What about the loss of a loved one? What about when you have an unfaithful spouse? What about that? Does that emanate a great light? Yes, life has many poignant edges, for us to kind of see into and free ourselves from delusion at that time. So the woman went up to him and gave him a slap. This soul guy still hasn't penetrated, she said, and Hakuin roared with laughter. Yeah, well, it was no small thing to kind of go up to someone like Hakuin, some kind of fierce master like that, and give him a slap in the face. Don't you know about that, Roshi? Woo! Well, this is the freedom and spontaneity and playfulness of a clear mind. Yeah, it's not caught by anything. This is the laughter and the roar of the universe, recognizing itself. And Hakuin approves of this old woman. So I invite you to meet Hakuin, yeah, to meet the station lady, yeah, scrubbing that pot. I invite you to enter into the world of suchness right here, to enter in through the koan, sound of the single hand points the way, or who's hearing. Yeah. Drop that into this silence, this deep samadhi space. And then you will realize too that Amitabha Buddha does indeed crash through into this very body, and it is indeed joyous and a sweet and beautiful thing. Please enjoy. Yeah.